Thank you, Fred Lynn, and good morning, friends. How are you this morning? Are you happy? Are you down in the dumps, as they always say? Are you going bravely along, taking the world as it comes? Did I tell you about the old lady who had lived to be 100, and the reporters were interviewing her and asking her all sorts of questions, as reporters do, particularly about what she did during her life that made her live so many years? She said, "Well, when I worked hard. When I set loose." Set loose, that's good. "And when I worried, I went to sleep." So that was it. Pretty good rule to live by. One old man I knew years ago said about his long life, "Well, I never tried to plow up hard stumps. When I come to a big stump in life, I just plowed around it." And that's a good idea, too. Just plow around it. Don't beat your wings against the cage of life and battle scar your soul. Don't do it. Work hard, as the old woman said. Set loose. Don't worry. And plow around the bad places. And you'll live to be 100 years old, maybe. You know, we have so many memories of life. I never forget my life as a small girl in Arizona. Some way I got to thinking about it last night, and I couldn't get it off my mind. My father had tuberculosis, you know, and he journeyed from our dear Ozarks clear to Arizona to try to fight for health. He took his little family. He'd gone 2 years, had he gone 2 years sooner, he would have lived, no doubt of it at all. We lived in the beautiful Salt River Valley of Arizona, and the climate was near heaven. That valley is supposed to be in every way just like the old Bible country of Palestine. My father bought a little 20-acre farm, rather a vineyard farm. We had pomegranates and figs all about the dooryard. We children climbed the fig trees and stuffed and ate them all the time, sweet figs. And we had grapes and almonds, and the old-time Palestine doves cooed all night. The acacia trees were in our dooryard. The acacia tree is the oldest tree mentioned in the Bible. And the tall white yuccas, or ghost lilies as they call them, grew so straight and shone like alabaster in the moonlight. And the little adobe or mud houses decked the roadsides. And the peaceful Pima Indians and the Maricopa Indians were everywhere, going everywhere. They came to gather the grapes for drying for us, and they came to visit us. Yes, they did. The roads were wide and smooth and straight, and the orange trees scented the nights. And in the afternoon, we children went out on the plains and dug into the hundreds of small mounds and found beads left there by the early mound builders. What an experience for a child. No wonder I remember it. The whole country was settled by Mormons, and I'll never forget them. They were wonderful neighbors to us and to my sick father, and we were the only Gentile family, as non-Mormons were called, living within a radius of 20 miles around. Around Mesa was where our little farm was, the little town of Mesa. We went to school with Mormon children, and they were splendid children, honest and well-disciplined. They had beautiful ranches of sometimes 1,000 acres and were very prosperous people. Our nearest neighbor was Sam Johnson, a big, fine man, and he was a Mormon elder, one of the 12 in the temple at Salt Lake. And he used to come and carry my thin-waisted father in his arms out into the shade of the trees and let him sit and enjoy the climate of this beautiful Palestine country. Such a climate you never knew. Terribly hot in the sun right around noon in the summertime, but cool nights and beautiful all the year round. Oh, it was a wonderful country. I know we all feel terribly apprehensive today. I don't want to say much about it. After the speech of the president last night, it was a very fine speech, but it all looks fearful. But let's just hope and above all pray. I was telling Al Stone just now, I was reading to him what the great Albert Schweitzer, that great godly man, said. He said, "Man has lost the capacity to foresee and forestall. He will end by destroying the earth." Well, that I'm afraid of it. Remember the old line, though, "More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of." if war comes this time, I think we're all gone anyway. It's a destroying of civilization. So why kill ourselves with worry before it comes? I picked up a letter on my desk from Dr. W.H. Knott at Jasper, Missouri last night. It was written last May, and he was telling me about his old blueback spelling days. It was written on the first day of May, and he said, perhaps you can remember that 64 years ago today, Commodore Dewey sank the Spanish fleet in Manila Bay. Yes, I remembered it, Doctor, I surely did. And last night the thought came to me that we did it for Cuba, to save that nation from being robbed and exploited by Spain. And we sacrificed our fine boys, yes, to save Cuba. And what do we get back from it now? Oh, well, let's don't think about it. I remember I was on the train going to Arizona to visit my aunt on her big ranch and spend part of the summer when that war first came up, that Spanish-American war, and was hot. I was 16, about 15 maybe, and on the train was a whole company of grand young boys from the University of Kentucky going to that war. We had a fine time playing our mandolins and guitars and kept the whole train amused. And then the boys all got off at Alamogordo, New Mexico to change cars. I went on. And I shed tears when they left, of course. Oh, yes. Our fine boys. And one old gentleman, as he told them goodbye, said, boys, one mother's son of you is worth the whole race of greasers. And he was shedding tears, too, and I have never forgotten it. Never shall. That's my memory of the Spanish-American War. We have always fought others' battles and got no gratitude for it, nor asked any, as the president said. We have always paid the price, he said. I must tell you this. You remember the dear old lady who was 103, Mrs. Lois Bement of Springdale, Arkansas, the one who wrote me the quiz which I put on the air. What a wonderful woman she was. I had it here written down. She died at Springdale, Arkansas, at the home of her daughter, Mrs. Lewis Anderson, 2 weeks ago. She just went to sleep, lacking only 10 days of being 104. She was born in Lexington, Ohio, and moved to Trenton, Missouri in 1867. In 1880, she married George S. Bement and moved to Springdale, Arkansas. He died in 1940. Mrs. Bement was a teacher and a writer, and she wrote and published short stories after her 95th birthday. Don't tell me you can't. She recalled her childhood days and the time when Frank James, brother of the outlaw Jesse James, spent a night at her father's home while driving a herd of cattle to market. She also remembered Johnny Appleseed of great fame, who planted apple seeds as he traveled about, a poor man going from place to place all over America planting apple seeds. He had visited her parents, she said, many times. My, what a life to have lived and remember all these things. And she had such a grand mind. I never got to see her. And that was a disappointment of my life. It really was. She, who visited her? My friend Virginia Fernberg visited her in Springdale last year. Peace be to her soul. Mother in Israel she was, as the Bible says. Mrs. Anderson, her daughter, wrote me, and she said, my wonderful mother, I miss her so. Yes, indeed you do, Ms. Anderson. It will be many a day before there will be another like her. Yes, it will. On a recent broadcast, I said that people, to put it this way, just didn't learn to be good writers nowadays. I meant write nicely so one could read it. I never saw the way some of the young folks write nowadays, but not all of them, I suppose. Maybe I shouldn't have made such a broad, sweeping matter. So a nice thing happened. Mrs. Virgil D. Rich, who teaches in the public schools of Springfield, wrote me a lovely letter. And my, if you could only see her writing. It looked like the finest engraving. I never got such a beautiful letter. And she was brought up in the old-time Spencerian method. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. It's this new vertical method which came in about 45 or 50 years ago which ruined the writing of the pupils. But the nice thing Mrs. Rich did, she let all her pupils in the grade she has write their names and sent me the list to show me that they were pretty good at penmanship. And they were. All of them wrote plainly. And while not beautiful like the old Spencerian style, it was still readable and scholarly. I want to send congratulations to the students and thank you, you young folks, all of you. It was fun to get your names you'd written. In the old days, they used to teach writing. That was a very important part of schooling. We had our copybooks, and each morning out they came, and the writing class lasted about a half hour. And the teacher went from one desk to another, instructing carefully. I wonder if they do that nowadays. And when my father was young, they had regular writing schools at night where people attended. Young folks and older ones, if they wished. My father said he worked for a family on a farm to get his money to go to writing school. And my father wrote a most beautiful hand. Great attention was paid to writing. I doubt if it is now. Thanks, Mrs. Rich, and to all your dear bunch. Come again and come see me. Mrs. Rich says her mother watched over her writing when a child and guided her and taught her. I'm sure she did. You can see that somebody did. I wonder if any mother does that now. My father spent hours teaching his children to write. Believe me, I can write a beautiful hand. I'm going to brag on myself. And my brother's handwriting was almost a showpiece. Wonderful. Yes, there should be more attention paid to writing. Thanks to four other persons who guessed the last riddle. About time for me to close now. The bald head. There was Mrs. Blanche Evans at Marshfield, and Ivy Talbert at Seligman, Mary Matthews Weaver of Springfield, and Miss Delmer Miller at Stella. And it was wonderful, you know, the bald head one. So I'll give you another riddle before long. My time's up. I got to run. I'll see you next Saturday. I'm down at Eureka Springs at the big festival. I'll see you next Saturday, the Lord willing, the creek don't rise.